Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, everybody. It is Thursday in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. My name is Adam Bittner, assistant sports editor for multimedia at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, back with Paul Zeiss for our weekly Zeiss is Right video. Paul, I was sick last week, so I'm excited to talk some Steelers free agency, some Steelers draft needs and how they might have changed because of free agency, and also get your thoughts on the moves that they've made so far. How are you?
I'm good. I can't complain. I can't complain at all. I'm doing all right.
Well, we're going to get into it here in a second. We'll talk a little bit of Russell Wilson. We'll talk about Brock Bowers down at Georgia Pro Day, Arthur Smith chatting him up a little bit. Is there any potential interest there? Also going to get into the Pirates, the Penguins, and Pitt basketball later in the show. Before we do, just want to thank our sponsor for this episode and every episode of the Zeiss is Right show here on the Post-Gazette Sports Now YouTube channel. Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. There's no better place to get new windows and doors installed in your home than Pella, who can help you save on energy costs year-round. Schedule a free in-home consultation with your local Pella Windows and Doors to find the right product for your home and budget. Give them a call at 866-593-1560 to discuss your project further. That's 866-593-1560 to get started planning on your new windows and doors installation with Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. First of all, Paul, I just wanted to get your quick thoughts on what the Steelers have done in free agency so far. Obviously signing Russell Wilson and Patrick Queen, trading Deontay Johnson. What grade are you giving the moves that they've made to this point, and what do they have to do to keep that grade over the next week or so?
Well, I give them a C because I think it's kind of incomplete right now. And, you know, I mean, obviously, if you take each of these deals one at a time, obviously the big one is Patrick Queen. I think that fills a real big need for them. I think he's a pretty good player. I know that people say, well, you know, he benefited from playing next to Roquan. But the thing about it, he's going to be playing alongside good players here too. And I think in the Steelers scheme, he's going to be a pretty big addition. I like him a lot. I like that move probably the most. The second best move, obviously, is Russell Wilson. I mean, as I wrote in a column, I have no idea why anybody would have a downside to this move when you consider – it's $1.2 million. There's no guarantee beyond this year. If he stinks, okay, you're out $1.2 million. You haven't had to give up trade picks for him. You haven't had to trade players for him. You haven't had to, you know, commit a bunch of money to him. You're taking a flyer on a guy who, you know, last year wasn't great, but he wasn't horrible either. He was better than the Steelers guys last year. So if he can give the Steelers what he did last year, 26 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, it's a really good move for them, especially given the way that they want to play. At that point, I mean, obviously, okay, they signed a punter. He 47.3 yards per punt. Good. I mean, I don't know. He's a punter. But it was a position of need, and they took care of that. I'm just the Deontay Johnson move. You and I have talked about receivers for seemingly as long as this show has been around. And okay, we got rid of a cancer, apparently. I mean, whatever. But he was a pretty productive cancer at a position where you don't really have anyone else. You've got one guy now. And so that's why I give it a C. I mean, and I don't know what's his name, Dante Jackson. I have a friend who is like almost a borderline professional, what do they call it, daily fantasy guy. I mean, he makes a lot of money every year. He's a guy that listens to, you know, all of the serious radio shows and does all the research and everything else. And he basically said he made a lot of money last year figuring out what receiver was going to be going against Dante Jackson and playing him in his daily fantasy line. So that's not exactly encouraging. The other thing is, apparently he was pretty productive and then had an ACL tear. And the one thing that he had going for him was his, you know, super speed. And, you know, he's kind of lost a half a step. And I don't know what to think of PFF, but the PFF ratings on Dante Jackson aren't good. So in my mind, they got rid of a player who was productive and could help them win to add somebody who I don't know that they've really addressed the corner position. So I give it a C. I mean, they need to do a hell of a lot more before I'm really ready to say it's anything other than a C.
Well, yeah, I agree, Paul. I think there's a lot of positions that they still haven't addressed, and they still have a lot of money to spend, you know, relative to what they've freed up by some of the people that they've cut, some of the people they had coming off expiring deals. So by no means do I think free agency should be over, but, you know, we got a deal in the now, right, Paul? We don't get the right luxury of knowing what they're going to do, you know, next Monday or anything. So how have the Steelers' draft needs changed to you to this point? And that doesn't mean that they can't sign someone and we're going to have a different conversation next week. But do you look at any positions in the draft and say they're higher on your priority list than they were a week ago or lower on your priority list than they were a week ago? I guess we can probably start at receiver for you and me.
Well, yeah, receiver and corner. I mean, they're still high on my list. And I know that they just traded for a corner, but for all the reasons I laid out, I think that they're going to still – he sounds to me like a slot corner at best. And so that tells me they still need a second corner. But receiver to me is where the number one need is receiver now. So receiver and corner, I guess if they changed anything a little bit, yeah. Inside linebacker maybe is a little less of a priority now. I mean, you went out and got a guy who probably is going to solidify that. You still got, you know, the three guys that were here last year. It sounds like one might not be ready to play at any time soon. But it sounds like, to me at least, and maybe I'm, you know, but it sounds like the other two guys, probably Kaywon Alexander and Landon Roberts, between those two guys, they're gonna both be back. So you probably don't need an inside linebacker. So the needs have changed. Yeah, okay. Inside linebacker is lower on the priority, but I still think corner and receiver have to be really, really high. And quite frankly, center and tackle. And those are the four areas right now that, to me, I look at and say they've got to at least get address two of those areas in free agency. And not even necessarily, like, for instance, you can go get one or even two free agent receivers, and I still think you need to go sign one or need to draft at least one. I guess if you sign a corner, okay, you probably put that a little bit lower on the scale, but they still need a tackle and they still need a center. So center, tackle, receiver, corner. Those are the positions that they need to go get.
Tyler Boyd is a name that's getting connected to the Steelers a bunch at receiver, Paul. I've seen Josh Reynolds suggested. He's from Detroit. Let's say they get one of those two guys. You mentioned you still think they need to do something in the draft. I agree with you, but where in the draft would you address a receiver? Would you say maybe potentially first or second round? Would you say where we entered, you know, I think this process saying maybe a day three receiver, third, fourth round, because this is a deep class. I mean, how do you emphasize that? Because when I was talking to Brian Bacco on our reaction show after Deontay Johnson was traded, he seemed kind of dim to the idea of using a high pick on a receiver. How do you view the class that's available to them and what that need is, assuming they go out and get a veteran, maybe, you know, number three type of guy like Tyler Boyd?
Well, if they get Tyler Boyd, I still think that they the best receiver on the board when they pick. So if there's a really, really good receiver in the first round, you take them. You know, if there are, you know, if the top guys are off the board and then they're, you know, so now we're into the second group, maybe you wait till the second round. I, you know, But you need to make it a priority. I mean, you need to make sure that you go get a receiver. And so I would not hate it if it was in the first round, if it was the right guy. I want to see what they do in free agency first, though. The problem is there's not a lot of receivers that are left on the market. There are some guys like Mike Williams and Michael Thomas. I don't know. Both of them come with some physical, you know, red flags physically. But there's just not a ton left. I think Tyler Boyd would be a nice, you know, slot receiver for them, like a third guy. But they really need to go get somebody that is going to make the other teams have to worry about the other side, so that George Pickens can have a chance to, you know, to get, you know, single coverage and have an opportunity to make big plays down the field and not be bracketed all the time and double teamed or whatever. Because that's the biggest thing, is if you can get a guy on the other side that actually makes the other teams think a little bit, then you get, have an opportunity maybe to really open some things up for George Pickens. So I'm of the belief that you give receiver as much attention as you possibly can.
Arthur Smith, I mentioned at the top of the show, was talking up Brock Bowers down at Georgia Pro Day. The whole Steelers contingent was there, so they had a lot of eyes on him. They had a lot of eyes on all these Georgia prospects we've been talking about. Ladd McConkey, Cedric Van Pran, Amarius Mims, just a few of the names. But I want to talk about tight end, Paul, because we've mentioned that in the Arthur Smith offense that that could be a position of need for the Steelers. Pat Freiermuth's future with the team is still up in the air. If you have Brock Bowers as the top player on your board and he's available at 20, do you think about him at all, or do you look at what's happened with Kyle Pitts, who I think is known as one of the big fantasy football busts out there right now? Basically for what he did in Arthur Smith's offense. We know Russell Wilson doesn't see the middle of the field particularly well, but he's also really just a one-year option. At least that's how I'm looking at him. How do you look at tight end and the possibility of getting the best in the bunch in Brock Bowers? Because I don't know how much Georgia you watched during the season, but if you were rooting for a little chaos in college football, you were rooting against Georgia, and it always seemed like Brock Bowers ruined your dreams.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The thing about it is, I'm probably in the minority, Adam, but I probably would not sign Pat Freiermuth. I probably would move on from him. He's not a complete enough tight end for what they want from their tight ends, and he's injury prone. So I would probably move on from him. And if you do that, that opens up the possibility for a guy like Brock Bowers. That's the thing to me. If you have, and I would view tight end as an extension of receiver. You know, I think Freiermuth is not a bad receiver, actually. He's not a bad, tight end from that standpoint. But in this offense, they're going to be asking him to do a lot of other things that he's not really all that good at. And, you know, I know there's flights of fantasy that Mount Washington is going to become some, you know, cult hero, super tight end as well. But I think if you have a guy like Bowers on the board, yeah, I'm okay with that. I think you have to make a decision, though, with Freiermuth first. I know what my decision would be. Now, if they re-sign him or if they keep him around, okay, I'm okay with that too. But I just think that he's a situational tight end. And he's not a guy that probably is somebody you want to be your every down tight end, or, you know, for, you know, if you're trying to disguise running plays, or you're trying to disguise, we're going to pass. We want to make it look like the run. Well, if you have Pat Freiermuth in there, nobody's going to believe that. So to me, yeah, if you're telling me there's a complete tight end on the board, absolutely. I would tell you that is a position that they probably should address. Especially if it's a guy who's clearly the best of the bunch and you have an opportunity to take him. So, yeah, why not? One thing that's interesting, though, Adam, is it kind of tells you who really was the best team this year. The fact that the entire staff of the Steelers went down to Georgia's pro day. It kind of tells you that, you know, it was a fluke they lost to Alabama. And had they got into the playoffs, they probably would have mopped up the floor with everybody else.
Paul, I also wanted to ask you about quarterbacks. You obviously have Russell Wilson for this year, but then after that, you know, I don't think you're going to be able to afford him if things go well. If they don't go well, then maybe you could bring him back, but I don't know why you would. If they do go well, I think you're going to get priced out given the cap commitments you already have. You've already made a statement to some extent that you don't believe in Kenny Pickett between the Mason Rudolph situation and now bringing Russell Wilson in. Are you still looking at quarterback as something you potentially spend a pick on? You know, you and I have talked about those later quarterbacks a fair amount, Bo Nix, Michael Penix Jr. I think we both agree you don't want to go too early with those guys, but if they fall to the third round, is that still something you explore with an eye toward 2025, saying you're going to have these two guys competing with you know, Kenny Pickett competing with whoever they draft, and then maybe make another move? I haven't really formed an opinion yet. I'm still kind of ruminating, but I'm curious what your thoughts are on how you view that position in the context of Russell Wilson.
If Michael Penix drops to the third round, yes, I'd say you take him. Absolutely take him. Third round, you get a guy that potentially could be a decent quarterback. I'm not as high on him as a first rounder. But as a third rounder, and you're bringing him in to be your third guy to learn, to mentor, you know, or to have Russell Wilson mentor and teach and you know, given his skill set and the way that he throws the ball and some of his physical tools, yeah, I would be all over that. I've told you many times on this show, I'm not a Bo Nix fan. I just don't think he's going to be a good NFL quarterback. He looks to me like a guy who is sort of going to be, and I don't know, put it this way. To me, I don't think his upside is as high as Mason Rudolph's. So whatever you think Mason Rudolph is, and there's some people in this town that think he's legitimately a starting quarterback. Okay. I have to see evidence of that. I know he played pretty well for a couple of games, and that was fun and all that other stuff. But at the end of the day, I'd have to see evidence that he could be a starting quarterback for a full season. So I'm not high on Bo Nix. But there's a couple of other guys that are out there that if they're around in the third or fourth round, I would think about taking, absolutely. You know, it's interesting, in my mailbag, I think it should be up now, my mailbag, one question that someone asked was, you know, should the Steelers think about trading Kenny Pickett and bringing in this year for a guy like Ryan Tannehill and then drafting a guy? You know, I don't know. To me, it seems like a whole lot of moving parts for one position right now. I think you've got it pretty set, and you're going to give Kenny Pickett an opportunity to try even win the job. Or, you know, if Russell Wilson doesn't play well, you can find out what you have in Kenny Pickett. So I don't know if I'm ready to trade him.
Yeah, but I think you do have to. I think it's just a difficult position to be in going into next year, Paul, with only a guy that you've kind of expressed some skepticism about with your actions on the roster. We know that's kind of the way in the NFL, is having guys being able to compete. And you're going to need a third quarterback anyway. So right. I think that's still a live option for me. We mentioned the need at corner. Just wanted to go into that a little bit more. What are you looking for? Are you looking for a first round potential cornerback? Some of these guys we've talked about, like Nate Wiggins, Kool-Aid McKinstry, Terry and Arnold, if he's available. Do you want a 1B to Joey Porter's 1A, or potentially a 1A and Joey Porter's your 1B? Or do you look at it more as Brian Bacco does when we talk about that position? He says you really just need to find a Robin to Joey Porter Jr.'s Batman, and just find a solid number two who can get the job done, but maybe isn't a number one kind of guy.
I would like to see them go out and get a good number two, or, you know, a number one. In other words, I want them to have that position you can look at that position for the next 6 or 7 years and know that it's locked up with two really good players. And the bottom line is the way that they go out and get edge rushers all the time, the way they build their defensive line. I mean, look, they do a good job of putting together defensive lines, and they don't always have to use high picks on them. They're just very good at putting together defensive lines for their scheme. I mean, if you solidify corner, Adam, think about that defense now. I mean, you've got edge rushers. You've got a guy like Cam Hayward that can, you know, put pressure up the middle. You know, you've now solidified your inside linebacker position. Man, if now all of a sudden we're starting to look at and say, wow, this is a defense that might be that defense that we keep hearing about the last 2 or 3 years. It might actually be able to start living up to, well, it's the most expensive or second most expensive defense in the league. It might actually be able to live up to that if you solidify the corner spots. So you have one corner, obviously. Go get a second guy. And you know what? If it's somebody you draft high, I'm okay with that. I really am. What I'm not interested in is, you know, this Dante Jackson type player that is probably a slot corner trying to play as your second corner outside. I mean, they already got enough guys like that.
Yeah, I agree. And they've had enough guys like that. And, you know, you think about a Levi Wallace, what Patrick Peterson became in the later stages. I agree with you, Paul. I want some pedigree out there. I still think corner should be a live option with the first round pick, especially if you're not going to get, you know, the tackles that you really like, the potentially Jackson Powers Johnson, if he's off the board. I think corner is the place that you look because there's just so many good athletes in this class. Any final thoughts on NFL free agency, what we've seen around the division, Derrick Henry going to Baltimore, T. Higgins wanting to be traded out of Cincinnati. And now there's some talk. James Franklin is Penn State's James Franklin's trending on Twitter this morning because of his comments at his spring practice news conference, suggesting that Howie Roseman talked to Saquon Barkley before he should, and then that there may be a tampering investigation coming in Philadelphia.
Yeah, good luck with that. My thing is those kinds of things happen every single year, right? And the NFL says, we're going to get right on it. And then they basically don't do anything about it. They let it die on the vine, and that's what I think will happen here. They don't want that. They don't want to deal with that. You know, they especially don't want to now you've got James Franklin saying something. Now they've got to try and bring him into the mix and talk to him and find out what – they don't want to do all that. So my guess is what's going to happen is they're going to say, hey, we're going to look into this. And then it's never going to be really looked into. And it's just hopefully they're going to hope that everybody forgets about it. So there's that. The other part of it, Derrick Henry to the Ravens, I think, is interesting. I don't know what he has left in the tank, but with the way they run the football and their offensive line and obviously Lamar Jackson, if he's got something left in the tank, that becomes a pretty scary combination in many, many ways. I think that the Bengals really, you know, if they lose Boyd and Higgins, boy, one of the biggest strengths of that team was all of their skill position guys. And now they also lost Joe Mixon. It's going to be interesting to see how they rebuild that because obviously you've got a guy like Joe Burrow. You better put weapons around him. So there's that. I actually think if Deshaun Watson is reasonably good, he doesn't have to be what he was in Houston, but if he's reasonably good, I think the Browns are the best team in the division. But he's got to be reasonably good. But that's just, you know, sitting here right now. Obviously, there's another, you know, month or two in free agency and then the draft. But sitting here right now, I think if Deshaun Watson is reasonably good, they have a shot to be the best team in the division. Other thing I'll say is this, two things. One, would you rather have Russ Wilson at $1.2 million or Kirk Cousins at $180 million and $100 million guaranteed? I know what my answer is every day of every week because Kirk Cousins isn't 100 times better than Russell Wilson, okay? He just isn't. I'm not even sure, coming off an Achilles tear, that he's better than Russell Wilson. So there's that. The second thing is this. Would you rather have Russell Wilson at $1.2 million or Sam Darnold at $10 million? Which I have no idea why there was such a market for Sam Darnold. He's the kind of guy who has the physical attributes and he just looks the part and he's strong and he's big and he throws it a mile and he can throw it through a wall that every coach convinces themselves, I can make that dude a star. If you give him to me, I can make him a star. And then he breaks their heart. So I don't really understand that. And then the last thing is Mason Rudolph. Short of coming back to the Steelers and competing with Kenny Pickett, a guy he's already proven he could beat out, I think he landed in the best spot he could possibly land. Because obviously they've got Will Levis. But, I mean, first of all, the coach down there didn't draft Will Levis. Second of all, Will Levis had, you know, a few moments of brilliance last year, but he also had a lot of moments of really not very good. So, you know, Rudolph going there probably gives him an opportunity. I would expect there'll be a point this year he might have an opportunity to be a starter. So he probably is in the best place he could possibly be. So that's that.
I like that. It was a nice summation, Paul. We're going to get into some Pitt basketball. We're going to get into some Pirates and maybe a little bit of Penguins if we have time. Before we do, just want to thank another sponsor, Pitt Johnstown. It's a Pitt quality education with up close and personal learning, a top ranked Northeast public college by U.S. News and World Report. Generous scholarships and financial aid are available, located on 655 picturesque acres with easy access to the city center, including shopping and dining. A vibrant campus life with an active D2 athlete community. Check out Pitt Johnstown today. Paul, as we record this, Joe Lenardi still has Pitt out this morning. It's in his next four out, not even in his first four out. He's added a little section in the bracketology where he says who has a chance to be winning in today. So this is Thursday. Pitt is not on that list. So that presumably means that either they're going to have to get some help or they're going to have to beat North Carolina in their second game at the ACC tournament. How brutal is this outcome for Pitt, for a team that if they win today, if they beat Wake Forest, they have 22 wins and possibly still could get left out of this tournament?
Let's just start here, Adam. Doomsday scenario for the ACC. Boston College beats Virginia tonight. I'm sorry. So Thursday, full disclosure, we're doing this Thursday before the games are being played. So that's full disclosure. But Boston College beats Virginia tonight. You could be looking at a scenario where Duke, North Carolina, and the winner of Wake Forest Pitt are the only three ACC teams that get in. I mean, it sounds absolutely crazy. I know that there are some metrics that have, even though that Clemson lost to BC, they might still be in. But, boy, if you're a bubble team, that's certainly not a loss you want to have on your resume. So if you think about it, you know, Wake Forest Pitt probably is, you know, the scenario is if Wake Forest wins, they're in. Okay. If Pitt wins, they might still need to do more. I think that's lunacy. I think if Pitt wins, they're probably going to get in. They might be another situation where they're in the first four, but they're probably going to get in. I can't imagine. You know, and I know all this, you know, Seth Davises of the world and all the other guardians of the game, so to speak, they all, you know, well, they don't look at stuff like that. There's no chance they don't look at stuff like that. And if the bracket comes out and there's only three ACC teams in, they're going to figure out a way to squeeze another one in at least. So to me, for Pitt, then, you know, they got the best case they got, they could have got, which was Wake Forest winning, you know, over, you know, who'd they beat yesterday? Notre Dame, I think. Because if Pitt played Notre Dame, I would tell you, I absolutely agree that beating Notre Dame today would have done nothing for them. But I think beating Wake Forest, I'm pretty sure it's a quad one win. That would probably go a long way. Obviously, you want to make sure, you know, go out and beat North Carolina tomorrow night. But it's ridiculous to me. I look at the schedules that I keep hearing about all these teams have played that, you know, Pitt didn't play. And I'm just not seeing it. I the great example is, you know, our old friend, Jamie Dixon. Take a look at his non-conference schedule and tell me what exactly he did in the non-conference that makes them a lock and Pitt is not a lock. You know, it's just ridiculous. So I don't understand the metrics, obviously, but I know this. Two things are going to kill Pitt if they don't make it. One, losing to Missouri. That hurts. But the flip side of that is Missouri stinks. So if Missouri was really good, that loss would be better, you know, but so it's not Pitt's fault that Missouri, you know, has had a horrific season. They weren't supposed to. And the other part of it is people say, well, you didn't challenge yourself. Well, that was an ACC-SEC challenge game. Pitt had nothing to do with scheduling that game. The second thing is, it's not Pitt's fault that Bob Huggins decided on the busiest night in Pittsburgh in maybe 15, you know, maybe 30 years, the busiest night in Pittsburgh, that Bob Huggins decided to tie one on and wrap his SUV around a fire hydrant or whatever he did in the North Shore. Because the bottom line is, if that doesn't happen, he's still coaching. All those guys don't leave, and all the turmoil they have doesn't happen, and that team's pretty good. And then all of a sudden, that game is something that is a much better game on Pitt's schedule. So, you know, here we are, and this is how silly it is. You know, last night, Pitt fans were rooting for Georgetown. I think it was Georgetown to beat Providence, because Providence is one of those teams on the bubble. They were rooting for DePaul, which it almost happened, by the way, to beat Villanova. Now they're rooting for Florida Atlantic to win the American or whatever their conference they're in. Maybe they're Conference USA, whatever they are. The Florida Atlantic needs to win that league, and Dayton needs to win the Atlantic 10, because those two teams are locks. And if those two teams win their conference tournament, they will make those conferences one-bid leagues. But if they don't win, now all of a sudden they'll be two-bid leagues. So there will be one less bid, you know, on the bubble. So, I mean, this is what you're down to if you're a Pitt fan, you know, rooting for things like this. I don't know. I'm not sure who Providence plays today. Maybe Creighton or somebody. I'm not even sure who they play today. You got to root against Providence again today. You got to root against Villanova again today. You got to root for Dayton, which means you're rooting actually against Duquesne, I think. I think Duquesne and Dayton play tonight, if I'm not mistaken. So you got to root for Dayton. You've got to root for Florida Atlantic. And there's a couple of other teams that you got to root for. But most importantly, Pitt has to take care of business, which I think they will. I think they will beat Wake Forest. I'm not convinced they'll beat North Carolina. Although, if you think about it, over the last 5 or 6 years, one thing Jeff Capel has been able to do is beat North Carolina. So, you know, win two games. We're not even talking about all this other silliness. Win one, it's going to be a real, real, real sweat for 48 hours from Friday till Sunday. Don't win tomorrow, or I'm sorry, today. If you don't win today, well, then probably it doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah, it's just hard to imagine a 22-win Pitt team getting left out of the NCAA tournament, and it's a bad spot for them to be in. But a lot of things have gone wrong around the conference for that to be there. So, it's just difficult to conceive of, but it looks like it could happen. Paul, also wanted to get your thoughts on Pirate Spring Training. Anything catching your eye down there in a real and meaningful way? It's spring training, so there's always guys doing well, and there's always guys who do well, and then it doesn't translate to the season. Are you looking at what Henry Davis is doing and saying, that's legit? Are you looking at Chase Anderson and his bid to make this rotation and saying, man, maybe he can be that addition that they haven't made yet? Are you looking at O'Neill Cruz and saying, looks like he's all the way back, looks like he can be the player that the Pirates have been hoping for? Are you looking at Jared Jones as a young guy who could make this rotation and shake things up? Or are you just going to start your record keeping in that first series against the Marlins? And that's all that really matters.
Well, with O'Neill Cruz, you know, there's one question that matters. There's one question that matters that we don't know yet. Can he stay healthy? If O'Neill Cruz plays 130-plus games, let's say that. Let's not even say 150. Let's say 130-plus games, right? I think he's going to have a fantastic year. I think he's going to hit, you know, he'll hit 30, 35 home runs. The guy can actually hit the ball. There's no question about it. I don't think we have any questions about O'Neill Cruz other than can he stay healthy. Henry Davis? Maybe we get fooled by this every time, Adam, But have you heard the manager? I don't know if you heard the manager talking. I think it was yesterday with Jason Mackey, where he was saying something to the effect of, boy, he's come a long way as a catcher. He's really coming a long way as a catcher. He's, you know, doing the things he needs to do. I don't know. I mean, if he genuinely is, then yeah, I'm starting to get excited about Henry Davis, because you know, maybe he's got a position that he can play, and he's in a position that he actually fits in. And I think that he's the kind of guy who, if he's comfortable defensively, whatever he's doing, it probably settles him down at the plate as well. The pitchers I need to see. I just do. I'm not going to get excited about anybody in this rotation except for maybe Mitch Keller. And even him, I think what we saw last year down the stretch is Mitch Keller. You know, I think he's a good pitcher. I think he's probably a solid number two kind of guy on a staff that is a really good, maybe, you know, on a really good staff, actually probably a number three, but I think he's going to be a solid, steady guy that he's supposed to be. The rest of this rotation, I need to see it. I just need to, you know, all of these guys, they all, to me, come with some sort of buyer beware.
Yeah, I agree, Paul. I think it's a question of are all these guys going to pitch well? And I have my doubts about that. You know, that they're going to hit this inside street, and that's the way things. I think the best case scenario, you get a couple guys who turn out from all these moves, and you get a couple guys who don't, and I think you're going to have a pretty mediocre group in the most likely.
Well, scenario. And I think probably there is one other development we should talk about that's disappointing, but it looks like Ronzi Contreras is going to be the bad version that we saw, and not the good version that we've seen. I hope I'm wrong, but I've seen no evidence this spring training that he's sort of regrouped and found whatever it is that he was missing.
Yeah, right, that he was ever grouped in the first place. And I think that's, you know, one of my biggest frustrations with this front office, Paul, is that these guys get past double A and then they just hit a wall. Right. And I think – and they apparently don't have any answers for that. And, you know, we'll see about Quinn Priester, but, you know, I'm right there with you, Paul. I got to see it at the big leagues in games that count before I'm going to get excited about it. Paul, well, quickly here on the Penguins before we wrap up, how do you feel about what they had to do at the deadline versus what they did? And were the expectations possibly a little too high? Because I know a lot of people did not like this Jake Guentzel trade. But how many times have we sat here or in different spaces over the last decade and said, man, the Penguins gave up very little to get a lot in terms of rental potential at the deadline? Now they're on the other side of that, and I don't know that you can be super surprised that the return was not exactly what people were hoping for.
Well, I think that people haven't paid attention. I think if you looked even, you know, a number of the players that were moved on trade deadline day from other teams, rentals just weren't bringing back big returns. So, you know, I think Cal Dubas did the best he could do. I really do. I mean, would I have liked him to get one top prospect versus three, you know, middling prospects? Maybe, but what the Penguins need more than anything, they need to restock their farm system. They need to, you know, and you know, we sort of laugh at the whole Ben Cherington model, and the, you know, when they, but it is kind of what you need to do if you want to rebuild an organization. You've got to get to a point where you've got enough good players in your farm system, maybe not great players, but good players in your farm system that you can pluck and pick up, and you know, add depth to your roster. And then you get a couple of these guys that, you know, prospects that actually turn out to be a little better than you think. And, you know, now you're on your way. So, you know me, I would have liked to see them do more. I would have liked to see them unload more and give themselves more flexibility for the, you know, in the off season. But it was very clear to me that the marching orders were to not even approach, Brian Rust to see if, you know, hey, listen, we want to, you know, free up some money and, you know, we're going to try and trade you to a contender. Not even we're not even going to approach that. you know, not even approach any of the three, you know, stars not named Sidney Crosby, not even approach the idea of maybe trading Tristan Jarry. I mean, to me, I feel like Kyle Dubas didn't do enough, not because of what happened with Jake Guentzel. He got what he could get for Jake Guentzel. I had no problem with that trade. But he didn't do enough to really, truly give himself the flexibility he needs in the offseason to make some moves. And so, you know, now I hope in the offseason, but again, I think it's harder to sell a guy like Carlson or one of these other guys. Hey, we'd like to move you. It's harder to do in the offseason, I think, as during the season when, you know, you say, listen, we can put you on a contender right now. You have a chance to go win a Stanley Cup. So I think in the offseason, Adam, what I've liked about what's happened over the last month is that any of these flights of fantasy that this team can still rally the troops and all the other stuff, it's over. Okay? It's over. And here's the other thing. One thing that was very clear, trading Jake Guentzel, it really kind of deflated that locker room a little bit. There's guys in that locker room. I don't know. The night that he was traded, I watched the Penguins postgame. You know, on Sportsnet, you know, they always have a post-game show, and then they go into the locker room, and then they get Sullivan's comments. Here's what was really, really, really clear. Not one of the guys that talked, Crosby, Letang, Pedersen, not one of them was happy. Not one of them was happy. In fact, Crosby, who's always very gracious with the media, was very short, very kind of curt, very much body language like, I don't want to be sitting here and talking to you about this. I want to get the hell out of here. So that's kind of deflated them a little bit. And I think, you know, 15-1 in the three games after he got traded, you know, being outscored 15-1 suggests they weren't focused. But the best part about this stretch, you know, losing the other night in Ottawa, the best part about this stretch is we can end the flights of fantasy that, you know, that build around these three or four guys that somehow we can resurrect it. So to me, that was a long way to say, I think Cal Dubas should have done a better job of breaking this up even a little bit more and giving himself flexibility cap-wise, with more picks, with more prospects, whatever. He should have done more to gut this team than he did. And it's clear the marching orders were try and keep it intact so we keep Sidney Crosby happy as much as you can. Because, you know, he's going to want to try, and we owe it to him to take a shot at the cup. Which I or at the playoffs this year, which I think is silly, because Sidney Crosby is smart, and above all, Sidney Crosby, you know, is a great teammate and understands hockey. So if you went to him and said, "Listen, Sidney, we think we've got about three more really good years with you, maybe more, but we're going to put the window at three for right now. If you want to have an opportunity over those next 3 years," to really get back to being a contender, maybe have a shot at, you know, you have to let this temporary, you know, short-term stuff, you have to let it go. Because we've got to break this up so that we can really, truly rebuild this roster. And we think we can do it pretty quickly if we get out from underneath some of these contracts. We think we can do it pretty quickly. The other question, Adam, I'm surprised you didn't ask me, but if I was Cal Dubas, Fenway Sports Group, whoever, the Mike Sullivan era would be coming to an end at the end of the season. You don't need to fire him now because you're not going to try and spark a team to the playoffs. But I have no idea how you move forward with this. So that's just me.
Well, I think it's part of that same difficult conversation with Sidney Crosby, to be honest with you, Paul. I think Sidney Crosby likes Mike Sullivan. I think those star players like Mike Sullivan, and that seems to be the only reason that you would keep him around, is that's the style that the Penguins want to play. They don't want to adjust any more than Mike Sullivan does. Maybe Mike Sullivan's more willing to adjust than the star players are. I just think that you know, at some point, Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Chris Letang, they're going to have to answer some questions, not just about, you know, who's on the team, but how this team plays. Because I don't know that they have the pieces around them, and I don't know that those guys – they still think they can play, and that's fine, but the guys around them can't. And then the longer they maintain this fantasy that it's 2016, 2017, and they've got a fast roster around them, I think the more that sets the Penguins up for failure. But Paul, thanks for stopping by. We touched a lot of topics. I think we touched on a lot of topics well. Always a great conversation. Looking forward to getting back into it next week when we have a NCAA tournament bracket, maybe a few more Steelers moves to talk about.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Actually, that'd be fun to talk about the NCAA tournament and not all of the scenarios leading up to it. So have a good day, sir.
Take care, everyone. We will talk to you again next week.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post-Gazette Sports. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all of the sports coverage the Post-Gazette has to offer, visit post-gazette.com.